Hello and welcome to another episode of the Autoblog Podcast. I'm Greg Migliori. Joining me today in studio is senior editor for Autoblog Green, John Snyder.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good. It's Friday. It's 70 degrees, blue skies and sunny. Really good morning to be up and alive. It's August 2nd. Good times. Associate editor Joel Stocksdale, sitting across from me also in the studio. How you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, good times. It's, early August. We're still right in the thick of summer. Mm-hmm. Good time to drive cars.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what we're going to talk about today. John just got back from California, right?
Yeah, Northern California.
NoCal, driving the Subaru Outback. Joel, you were driving the Cadillac XT6. Where were you?
Down in kind of the D.C., Virginia, Maryland, gotcha. All that stuff area.
So you're a coastal elite right now? Is that who you are?
I guess, driving a big fancy caddy.
All right, so I was driving a Mercedes AMG C63S. The S kind of is tacked down there in a slightly awkward way. And I was driving that here in tropical Michigan. Then John and I have spent some time in the Hyundai Palisade, which is cool. Last week, I spent some time in the Palisades. Not really, I just drove right through them. But hey, that's the connection. And then we will spend your money. We've got a really nuanced, multi-layered one. So let's jump right in. The Outback is one of my favorite vehicles in the industry. Mm-hmm. It really kind of resonates with me as a guy who has a young son who I could sort of consider myself owning an Outback. Going back like almost 10 years, when I was at Auto Week, we had a long-term Outback, and I got a ton of seat time in that. I drove to Chicago to pick up some enormous speakers in this like random North Side neighborhood, and they both fit really well in the back of the Outback. So to me, it's the kind of car that fits a lot of different stages in your life. It's like the right size crossover. It's also basically a wagon, even though it's kind of lifted slightly. So whenever they do a new one, I really pay a lot of attention to it. Obviously, you were out there, you got the deep dive, you drove it. Just some initial impressions.
Sure. Well, yes, I saw this at the New York show and thought, approaching it from outside, I was like, this looks a lot like the last Outback. But as you get close, you start to notice some different details, particularly like the cladding. There's more of that. But inside, it looks completely different. And, the interior is all sort of designed around this big, almost 12-inch tablet oriented vertically. And it's integrated really well inside. And there's giant cup holders. The materials are a lot nicer. The ones I drove had Napa leather. When it came to driving it, it was just phenomenally better. This is on the Subaru Global platform now, which made a big difference for the Forester when I drove that. A lot quieter, stiffer. Just more refined, and found the same thing here with the Outback. It's a big step forward once you get behind the wheel, and you have to drive it to really notice that.
Gotcha. I think what's interesting too about Subaru is its interiors have made great strides in the last couple of years, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Subaru interiors were you knew what you were getting. It maybe wasn't the strong point of the car. Now, it's one of the selling points, I think. The cars are really looking more upscale. The materials are better. There appears to be more of like a game plan for like how and where they're putting things. Mm-hmm. So, this car starts at north of $35,000, almost $36,000.
Yeah.
So, car prices are going up, but that's not nothing. So you expect to have a decent interior for that kind of money.
Mm-hmm. And it comes with a lot of things standard, the very base model doesn't have that big touch screen. It's got two smaller ones, but you go up one trim level and it's got it. And it's got all sorts of optional, what would normally be optional equipment as standard. It's just really well thought out, really nice, storage spaces. There's a space on the passenger side of the center console to like stick your phone. There's a nice little cubby sort of below the touchscreen where there's an optional wireless charger, which is first time I've seen one in a Subaru.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
And then it's got this technology driver focus, which, you know, pays attention to your face. It does facial recognition, so it helps with driving, keeping you from getting distracted. But it also has, you know, it recognizes up to 5 people and stores their faces on board. And so when you get into the car, it looks at you, it knows you, it knows your settings, knows where you want everything. And it, as soon as you like start sliding behind the wheel, it starts adjusting everything for you. And our long-term Forester that we're getting is going to have that too. So I'm excited to try that out.
That's going to be really good for press cars, just because, you know, it's basically a different driver every night or every couple nights. But I could also see how in a family where, you know, one person drives it, you know, you play with the seats, you get your different radio stations, then, you know, your partner comes back and drives and you're like, oh, well, the seat's not where it should be. We're listening to like some station you don't want to hear. And then just boom, right back synced up. I kind of like that. That's cool.
It's cool.
A little paranoid about the facial recognition thing. There's a part of me that just feels like that's a little creepy.
It doesn't send anything to the cloud. It doesn't, you know, send data anywhere. It's just stored on board and you know, that's it. So I think they're very concerned about those privacy issues and know that their consumers aren't going to want to have that be a problem. But I'm looking forward to using it.
Yeah, but, no, I think so too. I think it's one of those things where you kind of like, there's that initial, I don't know, hesitation, wariness, but then you're like, okay, it works. It's, they're not stealing your bone marrow. It, you know, it makes sense. So here's a question for the room. Joel, we'll start with you. Forester or Outback? Which one? They tend to be a little cross-shopped. They offer somewhat comparable features. It's basically comes down to, do you want an SUV or a crossover wagon thing? And this would obviously necessitate you staying in the Subaru family.
I mean, probably depends on how much money I have to spend. Like if I had like a good amount of money and I could spring for like the Outback Turbo, I'd probably go for that. But if I was working on a budget, I think I'd probably go Forester. Partly just because the Forester is such a good package. It has so much space. It has such great visibility, and it's a really nice, tidy, small package that's easy to maneuver. But if I could spring for the turbo engine, I would take that if I had the option.
I think I'd take the Outback just because I really like the Outback, but it's a tough call. I really like the Forester too. Definitely, I would go for the turbo and the Outback just because that sounds like it's a really good engine. John, you have a choice on either one?
I'm going rogue on this one. I'm going Crosstrek Hybrid.
Okay. I mean, stunning, random thing from...
Well, if I'd known that that was an option, that would be what I would have picked.
Option C.
But but I have to say that you know, the Forester is good to drive. The Outback is great. You have 2 engine options. You've got the 2.5 naturally aspirated, and you've got the 2.4 turbo, which is awesome because there's a turbo in an Outback again. Both of them feel good. The 2.5 is adequate. The 2.4 turbo in the XT is really good. And the car just drives so well. It drives like a car, not like an SUV. It feels, you know, I felt like I could have been in like a Legacy or something. I was hauling around these corners in the, you know, through the redwood forest, and then drove it off road, and it was just eating up everything I could throw at it. The only thing I was having some problems with was scraping the bottom of the front fascia going over some deeper ruts. But I was talking to some folks at Subaru, and this seems like very like not they weren't very committed to this idea, but they're talking about it is what they said. Offering a quick release like front bumper, lower front bumper, so you can take that off if you're camping and you're gonna go off road and you don't want to scrape it up, you can just pop it off.
I'm trying to picture how that would look like. I want to think that would look really sweet. Like, you know, the front end of like, you know, the Raptor, or like, you know, the front end of like the Colorado, like the off-road version. That sounds kind of sweet. I think I would drive around without a bumper.
Yeah. And I was really impressed with how this thing, you know, could climb hills. The hill descent control is, really good in the X mode. And that's standard across the lineup. This thing was really comfortable off-road, and most comfortable on like soft roads. You know, cruising off you know, some of these logging roads with over gravel and dirt, it just felt really comfortable, really stable. Thing steers really well. Steering is like perfect in this, which that was the biggest surprise for me, was just how well the steering felt in this Outback. But yeah, so if I had to choose between that and the Forester, I would probably choose the Outback just because it's nicer and it just drives so well. I don't think I would need the turbo motor here in Michigan. But if I were going to tow, maybe the turbo can tow up to 3,500 pounds.
So. I think the turbo would be fun to drive, not having driven either one. But I feel like the naturally aspirated would be just fine for what I would use it for, probably.
Yeah, and the, you know, that gets 33 miles per gallon highway, 29 combined. So that's what I like about that one.
Very solid. Yeah. Very solid.
You lose 3 mpg with the turbo motor across the board.
That's interesting. Okay. So that's the Subaru Outback. Yeah. Sounds like a really interesting drive. I cannot wait to drive this thing. Can't wait to drive the Forester too. But again, the Outback is one of my spotlight cars that I tend to really pay attention to, get excited to drive. So yeah, very cool. Let's move on to another very important car for the industry and for Cadillac. And I guess last week for Joel Stocksdale, because he drove it. This is the 2020 Cadillac XT6. This is the crossover that fills a slot Cadillac has had an enormous hole in for quite some time. Every other luxury automaker has been able to like sort of round out their SUV lineup. Cadillac's taking its time doing it, but this is a critical entry. This does give them some bandwidth, some coverage in an area where people are buying these things. Let's see, you went up and down the coast of this thing. Some initial thoughts.
So the XT6 ended up being kind of a pleasant surprise. I had fairly low expectations for it. I mean, when it was revealed, it was, well, and it still doesn't look super striking. It's kind of conservative looking. It's a big three-row crossover. And most disappointingly, it seems to use a lot of existing GM crossover bones. It's got the 3.6 liter V6. It's transverse mounted, so it's either front drive or all-wheel drive, and it just doesn't sound very appealing when this is a company that gives us some pretty fantastic rear drive sports sedans. But having actually taken it out for a drive, you know, it's more than the sum of its parts. It's really, really quiet. It's really refined. It actually handles decently. I was kind of surprised. It body roll is pretty contained. Steering actually feels pretty good in it. Overall, pleasant surprise.
I think, you know, reading your review, nice job on the review, by the way. I think this kind of seems like it went to chalk. It went according to how I kind of thought it would, you know, shake out. Like, I noticed you note that the interior, you called it a mixed bag, but you also mentioned how, like, the chassis, the steering, it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me is what Cadillac and even General Motors has been doing for the last few years, is they have the chassis stuff down. They are dialed in on almost every area where you need a good suspension, good driving dynamics. They could give that to you. Powertrains are usually pretty good. I like the 3.6 liter V6. Mm-hmm. I think that's a strong engine. Looks for Cadillac, little divisive. Some people like them, some people don't, but you know, whatever. I think this is pretty good looking. It is what it is.
I completely ignored this when it was, you know, on the show floor in Detroit. I didn't even notice it there. But I saw one going down the highway the other day. I imagine someone who works at GM. and it turned my head. And I was like, wow, that looks good. That looks, imposing going down the highway. It looks fresh. It looks, I liked it. Big, boxy, looked pretty macho. I came around to it pretty quickly when I saw it, live.
That's an interesting take. I also saw one roaming somewhere around here. I feel like it was on Woodward or something. I was like, oh, that thing looks pretty good in real life. Much better than, on an auto show floor. Press pictures, I don't think, really do it justice. Random side note, I saw the mid-engine Corvette last night.
Oh, nice.
If you want to talk about GM vehicles you want to catch, it was totally on camo, manufacturer plates, driving down Maple Road here in suburban Detroit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you get to hear it? Well,
I didn't. I was in this Mercedes that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, had the windows down, actually. I think it was a busy, loud street,
right.
And I just didn't... The guy clearly wasn't exactly, trying to be seen. He was just kind of driving, and I was like, oh, wow, that thing looks awesome in real life. Anyways, back to the Cadillac. Interior sounds like it was a bit of a letdown, though, Joel. Kind of a mixed bag. Some of the materials were pretty good, but as Cadillac tends to do, they don't all tend to go together the right way.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the way the Cadillac has been lately, is that they do put nice materials in it. One of the things that has been showing up in a lot of their Cadillacs is this carbon fiber where they've woven in copper fibers, and
that's cool.
It's a really neat finish.
Yeah, that's neat.
So it's carbon fiber, but with kind of this more gold metallic kind of glint to it. That's really nice. But we were actually talking about this a little bit in kind of an office chat, that GM in general, their interior design has this weird chunky kind of look.
Absolutely.
That even when it's covered in nice materials, it still looks kind of cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating because, I mean, like we said, chassis and powertrain stuff, GM has down pat. I'd say that the 9-speed in this Cadillac could use a little bit of work. Every time I wanted to downshift, it seemed like I had to shift twice, which was a little bit annoying. But otherwise, not really any complaints there. And it's just if they could just up their interior game, that would be huge. And I think would really get some attention. Because you look at companies like Lincoln and Mercedes and Audi, their interiors are amazing. they look genuinely special. And that's where you spend all your time. So and if you're going to spend a lot of money on a luxury car, you want to feel that every time you sit in the car. And touching on exterior styling, I think it's a perfectly fine looking vehicle. I wish Cadillac had leaned in more on being brash and flashy, and because I feel like one of the things that worked really well for them is, the Escalade is still a big name for them. It's a car that everybody knows, and it's still a desirable vehicle. And a big part of that is that it screams, look at me, I make lots of money, I have this flashy, glitzy, luxurious vehicle. And I kind of feel like Cadillac should still lean into that.
Yeah, this is way more car than I need, mm-hmm. but I can afford it, so here I am.
Yeah.
I think this is pretty flashy considering the segment. If you look at some of the BMW and Mercedes offerings, they're kind of bland. So I think, Cadillac's definitely going for it. I think they get points for the grille, the headlights, the taillights.
Yeah.
They probably could have done a little bit more on the sides. It's, on the sides, it looks pretty standard, button down, Oxford shirt SUV, which, that's fine. So I'm curious too, where do you think this is going to fit in the segment, Joel? You think it's going to face off against the Lincoln Aviator. Mm-hmm. And then of course we've got the Germans, we've got Lexus, we've got, it's a very crowded field. Everybody's really there. Is this the vehicle that's going to steal some share for Cadillac?
I think it could in kind of its price tier. Cause I don't think it's entirely fair to compare it to say Mercedes-Benz GLS or BMW X7. Simply, in part because those each cost about $20,000, like $20,000, $30,000 more than the Cadillac. And, I mean, they also kind of feel like $20,000 or so nicer. But compared with some of the other kind of like really aging, like three-row luxury, entry-luxury stuff, like the Infiniti QX60 and the Acura MDX, I think this is a nice vehicle. I think it's much more refined than those vehicles. It drives nicer. And the interior is a little nicer than both of them, too. I think its toughest competition is going to be the Volvo XC90, which is still an extremely handsome SUV and has a wonderful interior. And I think the Lincoln Aviator could be an issue, too, because the Aviator is going to offer a lot more power.
Yeah.
And potentially offer like rear wheel drive, driving dynamics, and have a really nice interior for a similar price.
One thing that I think frustrates me a little bit with Cadillac is they keep doing very solid things that don't tend to really elevate it out of its current status. So it's like, if you're Mercedes or BMW and you're at the top of the heap, you could sort of afford to, you know, play it conservative, play it safe, do what, you know, everybody expects and get away with it. I feel like if you're Cadillac, you need to sort of go above like what these other people are doing. And I feel like they're playing a little too like straightforward. Like, I mean, this sounds like it's a very good, solid vehicle, but it doesn't sound like it's going to knock off one of the German competitors. We also have like Lincoln, which also is struggling with some of its sales, but they are elevating themselves. Like the interiors, the rear wheel drive chassis that they're seemingly pulling out of thin air, the interiors, they're good looking vehicles. So, I mean, you could look over here and it's like, well, Lincoln's doing this, like maybe like try to take some of those risks too. So, and to be fair for Lincoln, it's not really paying off for them on the sales chart. Like Lincoln's not taking down anybody, but the products are being very well received. So,
yeah, I kind of wonder if some of it is just that Cadillac is trying to get something onto the market as fast as it can while the crossover market is hot. Because, I mean, like you said, they didn't have anything in this segment yet. And, I mean, for a while, like, their only, like, car-based crossover was the SRX until they brought out the XT4 about a year or so ago, and now the XT6 is coming out this year. So I think part of it may be that like they're just trying to get something out and hopefully like maybe the next generation push the needle further.
That's a good point. And I think it's also fair to note that we're not like dogging on this thing. We're saying like, hey, it's pretty good. There's a lot of good stuff out there.
Yeah.
So any other Cadillac thoughts, gentlemen?
I just know we'll see a lot of them around here. I just don't know if we'll see a lot of them outside the Midwest.
Indeed, I agree with that. Well, car that you probably will see a lot of outside the Midwest is the 2019 AMG C63S.
Yes.
I think you'll see maybe not a lot of this car, but it definitely has broad crossover appeal. I drove this thing the last couple nights. John, I'm going to give you the keys for the weekend, I believe. You're a very lucky man. Yeah. I really enjoyed this car. I think it's the highest evolution of like what I want this size AMG to be. Like it really, it's a good version of the C-Class. It's a good version of, like I said, sort of this size of AMG. It feels really dialed in. The steering is like really good. You have this big oval almost type steering wheel. Depending on the different modes you could queue up, you could, you know, sort of, you know, tune the chassis settings. And you do feel the differences, I think. You know, you can tune up the powertrain, the suspension, the steering, things like that. And it takes corners well. It feels planted. It has a gorgeous interior. This one was awesome. I mean, like silver inserts, black leather, red sort of accents, red stitching. I just tweeted about this. So check that out if you follow me on Twitter. Check out, you know, we're going to have, I think Reese is going to do a review on this story later this month on this car. This one does cost, let's see, $97,830. So you're almost at six figures for a C-class. So, wow, that's a lot of money. For that, you do get the 4-liter V8 bi-turbo, 503 horsepower, 516 foot-pounds of torque. So you get like that legit AMG powertrain, or one of the very legit V8s they offer. And I don't know, that is a lot of money for a C-Class.
Is that the as-tested price, or like what's the base price?
That's the total retail price. The suggested, the MSRP standard is $74,600.
Okay. So that's a little more reasonable. It's 92, that's a lot. But if you can go easier on the options, it sounds like it's a little more reasonable.
Well, what we definitely did, for this, we essentially added every AMG either flashy or go fast thing you could get. So we've got like a carbon fiber pack on here. We've got 19-inch AMG forged cross-spoke wheels. We've got performance seats, the digital cluster. I mean, the carbon ceramic brakes, which are like this kind of beautiful golden thing. You don't need those to drive around like suburban Detroit or suburban anywhere for that matter. So there's ways to kind of cut costs here. That being said, if you're buying an AMG, are you trying to cut costs in your life? I mean, is this the area you skimp? You know, I don't know. Maybe drop Amazon or Netflix or something before that. I don't know. But the car drives really well. It sounds really good. AMG is starting to kind of be a little bit like M with BMW, where they offer different ways you can tune the drive character almost excessively. So I was driving around at different points in like comfort, because traffic is just really bad. Every road is under construction around here, but I'd have the exhaust still blaring, which is kind of fun. It's a flashy car. It looks really good. I keep always having this like internal argument, because I love the 3 Series. Like, I'm a big fan of the 3 Series. But it's just like, the C-Class has gotten so good. The way it looks inside and out, and then the different power plants it offers, that I'm almost like being like grudgingly forced to admit that I think I'd have to cross over into C-Class territory if I were going to buy one of these.
I was just going to
ask. They're just so good. I mean, they look so good. I mean, you look at a 3 Series right now, and it's an excellent car. I still conjures up all of the images I want for like a 3 Series, but
it doesn't. Yeah, the 3 Series doesn't have that. Oh, that something special that it used to.
I was just about to say that exactly.
And Mercedes seems to be capturing that more and more. That said, I mean, they're both good cars, but it'd be tough to choose between the two. But I think I would also choose Mercedes.
Yeah, this is coming to something that I was wanting to ask you guys. Since we've actually been in kind of most of this segment recently, we've had the M3 competition come through, we've had the Audi RS5 come through, and the Lexus RCF, and now this. I mean, of those, like, which is your choice?
It's a tough question.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I'm going to reserve the right to change my mind after I drive it this weekend, but I'm going with this.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be a prisoner of the moment, but I also would probably go with this, because I feel like all around AMG is just, they're just killing it right now. Like, they're doing a great job.
I love the interiors
that they've
been doing. I love the technology that they do. It's all, like, from the infotainment to the driver assist technology, it's all really well refined. It all works great. And I really like that. I appreciate that quite a bit. It adds a lot to the driving experience, especially for me who commutes, you know, in dense traffic every day. I would take that for that comfort. And then, I don't know, it's going to be fun, you know, when I get out in the open. So
it's a very comfortable car too. Like, I was stuck in traffic on the surface streets, and I was not, like, you know, getting that sort of like summer stuck in traffic feel where you want to be out of your car no matter how amazing your car is. It's comfortable. It's, you know, you can see out of it pretty well. It's obviously flashy, but it's, I think it's a very, very solid car. And I think AMG is doing, you know, a lot of the right things right now. I think they've, in the last decade, they've really found who they are as a modern sort of performance maker. I think they've evolved from just being this like German hot rod company that really puts forth well-executed, you know, models in all segments too. I think most of the AMGs I've tested lately, whether they were like SUV form or even, you know, this, you know, smaller sedan, they've all been good for their segment, but also sort of conveyed like that spirit of AMG. So really like this car. Any other thoughts on this, guys?
I just can't wait to drive it tonight.
All right. There you go. All right. So we'll shift over to the Hyundai Palisade. Very important vehicle for them, of course. Also arguably for the industry, because this is sort of marking Hyundai's foray into this segment. It's huge. It looks huge.
Yeah. It really does.
I think we got to start with the cup holders, though, right? Did you do a Nalgene test on this?
The Nalgene wouldn't fit in these cup holders. It's, they've got these sort of trick cup holders that like pop out to like surround your drink.
It's a total gizmo. Like, you don't need it, but it's also, it is kind of cool though, because like, say you need to put a bunch of stuff in the center console. Right. Close that up, put stuff there. Like, it would be good for like a purse or something.
Yeah, you can throw your phone, your wallet, your phone, keys, all that in there.
I did think it was amusing that both of you posted videos of the cup holders on Twitter.
It reminded me that the when I was driving the Niro EV, the Kia Niro EV has similar cup holders, but they're like sort of offset.
Yeah, I think the diagonally. Kia Soul is that way too.
Yeah. They're cool. I mean, it's like a little party trick, but yeah, not big enough for the Nalgene at all.
But the rest of the vehicle, huge.
Yeah.
A lot of space in this thing. It's the like sibling vehicle of the Kia Telluride, which we are definitely looking at as trying to get as a long-termer. Mm-hmm. So a lot of cool long-term stuff coming in. Stay tuned, listeners. Did you do anything in the Palisade,
Jim? I toted my boy around in it. Really easy to get a car seat in there. Tons of room between the captain's chairs to get to the back seat. A roomy back third row. You know, it's, I drove the Telluride recently and then I drove this. And I the Telluride is a little more like rugged, a little more SUV-ish. This is more like suburban crossover material. I like a lot of the design in the Palisade. In some of the testers I've been in, there's like the quilting's a little weird. It's this sort of unique pattern. In this one, there's this dash trim piece that's like sort of sparkly, which I wasn't really. It looked like a, you know, fishing lure or something. But the infotainment and the digital instrument panel looks great, works well. The car's comfortable to drive. It's pretty quiet, and yeah, it's very wide and, you know, solidly planted on the ground. I like it quite a bit. I think I would go with the Telluride though, just out of style choice.
Yeah, me too. And I did like how the Palisade looks. Mm-hmm. I think those rear taillights, this is like the theme of the show is taillights apparently, but it looks pretty good, I think. But agreed with you, the Telluride just kind of pulls it off a little bit better. It's a little bolder, a little slightly more different. I think for me, the defining like moment of this was like, oh, hey, Hyundai Motor Co. is a corporate entity, can make a very credible large SUV, is this and the Telluride, of course. So I think it's solid. I think, you know, I like driving it about as much as I like drive anything in this class. It's, you know, not the greatest moment of your life, but it's not offensive. You know, it's very capable. It seems like they've priced it and write about the, you know, the way they should. Let's put it that way. It should be competitive. I think the interior is pretty good too. Mm-hmm. I mean, they,
yeah,
it's Hyundai does a really good job of loading up these things, but not making them look like overdone, overwrought. You got a price over there on
no,
that?
No, this one doesn't have a price on it.
For some reason, I want to say it was 45, but I'm kind of pulling that number out of thin air. But yeah, I mean, solid vehicle. Fuel economy, not the greatest thing in the world. 19 city, 24 highway, 21 combined. But, you know, I mean, 3.8 liter V6, which is 291 horsepower. We've been driving that Hyundai Motor Co. engine for years now. Uh-huh. They keep refreshing it a little bit. I don't know. I think it's solid. I mean, Joel, I know you didn't get in this one, but Palisade's an important vehicle. You've probably written about it at some point. Any thoughts on this segment?
Yeah, I mean, this and the Telluride, I think, are probably about my favorite crossovers in the segment. I mean, based on my experience with the Telluride,
yeah,
that they're priced really, really well. I mean, the Telluride that we had, the interior felt like actually pretty luxurious, but it was still priced like kind of a mid-range three-row crossover for mm-hmm. this segment. And it's like, that's genuinely impressive. I don't know, styling-wise, I don't know which I would go with. Because so I like the Telluride's kind of like traditional SUV shape. But I do like some of the detailing on the Palisade.
Yeah.
I like that it has like these big vertical highlights kind of front and rear that almost look like brush guards or push bars on like a police car or something. I really like the taillight design that has the little like thin lines of like red light that come through mm-hmm. the little gray panel on the tailgate.
Yeah.
It's
very cool.
It's got cool detailing on it that I really appreciate. So it would be a tough choice for me to choose between the two.
Greg, before we move on, let me ask you this. The feature where when you signal either direction and it shows your blind spot displayed on the instrument panel, did you like that or not?
I've been going back and forth with this feature for about 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing it on the Accord Coupe back in like 13 or 14.
So yeah, so Honda has it where it's only on the right side and it displays on the infotainment screen. This one, it's kind of neat when you, it's for either side when you signal left or right, it displays on the left or right part of where the speedometer or whatever gauge would go, depending on what mode you're in, on the instrument panel right in front of you, which is kind of cool if you like it. But
I would say I didn't look if it's optional or not. I wouldn't pay for it. Let me put it that way. I liked it, but it also takes a little bit of, it's sort of like that mirror thing in some of the GM vehicles.
Sure. Yeah.
Where it takes a little bit of brain recalibration to fully use it.
Uh-huh.
So for me, it was like an extra second where almost my eyes were off the road that they didn't really need to be.
Yeah.
So I would say I wouldn't probably get it, to be honest. It's cool, but I probably wouldn't get it, to be honest, just because the use case isn't something that's like really, you know, relative to me. How about you?
I like it. I like it quite a bit. Again, like, I don't know how useful it is. I'm in the habit of looking over my shoulder every time I check, but this is actually like, you know, you can't see everything when you look over your shoulder.
I didn't merge on the expressway, though. I would like to merge on to like 696 and rush hour and mm-hmm. see how much that helped, because I'm like you. I'm compulsive. I'm like turning my head to the point where that's probably more dangerous than just checking your blind spots. So that's interesting. So you like it. Okay.
I'd probably get it if I were getting either of these cars, because it was on the Telluride too.
Yeah, I like it too. You can get it on the Kia K900 also, which is where I experienced it.
Okay, cool.
And I think it's great. I like that it actually offers both sides, because that's mm-hmm. kind of my chief complaint with Honda Lane Watch, is that it was only for the right-hand side. And I get the reasoning behind it. At the time, the only screen that was in the car was the infotainment screen. And they're like, well, we don't want you looking right to check your left side. We still want you to actually like use your mirrors and like check your blind spot. But with this, I mean, now you've got both sides. And I like that it shows up in the instrument cluster display.
I really like that.
Yeah,
because totally. One of the other things that bothered me about Lane Watch was that since it was in the center screen, it meant that if I was going to scan over to the right, instead of like looking at my rear view mirror, I would have like look, I'd have to like tell myself to look down at the center console or center stack. And I don't know. I'd just rather be able to like glance down, mirror, blind spot. And
yeah.
Have that quick scan and have like all those different views.
That's a good way to do it. Yeah. No, it's a cool feature. So you mentioned the K900. When did that come out? I'm almost wondering if this is like a tech of the year feature that we may. Maybe we need to like take a closer look at because it's iterative compared to the Honda.
I'm trying to remember when I went and drove Kia K900.
Been a while.
I think it might have been last fall or something.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I don't know if I don't think we would have been able to get the car.
Oh, that's a good
in
point.
Time for Tech of the Year. Okay. So maybe it could be this year.
Okay, might be one we work in there. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get more people's opinions on it for sure.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. That's what we've been driving. We can move on to spend my money. We've got a good one here. A little bit of a long one, but it's also pretty nuanced. This comes from Jeff in South Florida. So there's two scenarios here and they're kind of like similar. Let's put it that way. He wants a Jeep Wrangler. He drives a lot, 20,000 miles per year. He needs something for gas mileage. I don't know about the Wrangler.
Yeah, that's...
It is what it is. Wrangler would be about $54,000 according to the way he would spec it out, which is he'd want the Sahara model. He has a 2013 Accord, which we've referenced like five times on this podcast already, with a $128,000 on it, 128,000 miles, two kids, 10 and 6. So here's a couple of the scenarios. Keep the Accord for daily work. Buy the Wrangler at the end of this year, early 2020. Figures the Accord is good for another few years. Keep the new tires, the fluids. He did those recently. Or buy a Honda Clarity. See leftover 2018 model year for sales, which he's seeing for about $29,000. That's a pretty good deal, considering it's about $37,000, full price. Federal rebate. Gets it down to maybe around $20,000 that he would owe. That's a pretty good deal for a Clarity, I think. Calculating that, he'd pay it off after about a year and then get the Wrangler. Also, his work has a car charger for free energy. So basically, his thoughts are immediate fun versus possibly the better long-term move. Joel, you are our ace for spend my money. The ball is in your court, sir.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. Because his Accord definitely has plenty of time left on it. I mean, he can keep rocking that as long as he wants. But definitely for that amount of driving every year, it would be really nice to have something like the Clarity. And the Clarity would offer a big jump in fuel economy over his Accord.
Yeah, man, it's tough. I keep going back and forth. Like, it makes sense to just sort of roll with the Accord and drive it into the ground. But that is just such a good price for Clarity, and the Clarity is a really nice car to drive. It would be a huge upgrade. It's tough. I was originally gonna say keep the Accord, get the Wrangler now, keep the Accord and drive that into the ground. But I've gone the other way. I think the Clarity's just too good of a deal. I would get that. You're gonna like that, especially if you're spending 20,000 miles in it a year. It's going to be a huge quality of life increase and easy on the budget, especially with free charging at work. And then, you know, in a couple of years, get the Wrangler and see what's available. Maybe your priorities will have changed by then. Maybe you won't want that particular Wrangler. Maybe you'll find something used. You know, I don't know. But I'm going with option B. Get rid of the Accord, get the Clarity, wait on the Wrangler.
I agree with you. After looking at this, I think the very pragmatic approach is just keep the Accord, run it into the ground, get the Wrangler. Then you're only putting out money for one vehicle in this like immediate short term. Mm-hmm. Not quite sure, you know, how much of restriction money is. Because obviously that would be the better, more frugal play is just keep the Accord and then get the Wrangler. You're buying one less vehicle. But I mean, if you really kind of make a couple of moves here into the future, I would get the Clarity as well. I mean, it's such a screaming deal. There's a quality of life increase here. There is the ability to obviously save some money on fuel to, you know, get that sort of good feeling you get from, you know, driving a green car, mm-hmm. from letting your employer charge it every day. That's kind of good. And you're still leaving the Wrangler on the table. Like, this isn't like a this or that. Like, you're not saying get the Clarity and forget about the Wrangler. You're just waiting a year or two for the Wrangler. So I would do that. Get the Clarity, wait a little bit out of the Wrangler. And the other thing too is you could always just say, hey, I'm going to get the Clarity, start the clock on the Wrangler, and then like August of 2020, go get the Wrangler. You know, I mean, I think that's entirely reasonable too. So I would also go with column B. We'll finish up with you, Joel.
Yeah, I think what it's going to come down to is how much, like if this guy's listening, like figure out how much you, like, do you really, really want to like walk into the showroom, order exactly the Wrangler that you want with every single spec that you want, or if you're okay with getting a used one. I'm not saying one or the other is the way to go, but if you do want to like pick out exactly the color and specs that you want on a Wrangler, I would say go ahead and get the new one, keep the Accord. If not, if you're fine with getting a used one, maybe even getting some features that you hadn't planned on getting, because you can get a very high trim one for less money if you buy it used, then I'd say get the Clarity and pick up a used Wrangler. So I guess it really comes down to like, both of these choices are good. Do you want the new one spec'd exactly the way you want, or are you willing to save some money and maybe get one that isn't exactly what you want, maybe has some stuff that you didn't think you didn't know you wanted? So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of waffling a little bit. I think I would probably lean toward getting the Clarity and getting a used one, because especially if you get that Clarity and then run that into the ground,
yeah,
that will save you so much money in the long run.
You're really making a couple of different chess moves here. And actually, I think the long-term play is the smart play here. You're going to be spending a little bit more money, but I think you're going to be happier. I think ultimately, you know, more money will have left your bank account, but ultimately it's like the smarter long-term like distribution of funds, I think, if you will, versus just saving a little bit of money on the front end and then just running that Accord into the ground. My other psychoanalysis of this is, if you're bringing this up, you're probably on some level ready to be done with the Accord. I mean, maybe there's that part of it too. You know, you want something new, want to try something different. But I mean, it's a nuanced question. I think, Joel, you bring a very nuanced answer to it.
I feel like the margin of error between the two choices is, you know, it's pretty, I mean, there's not a wrong answer. And if you just got to go with your gut and do one or the other, it's not going to be the end of the world if, you know, the other one would be, you won't even notice that the other option would have been better. So I think you're fine either way, mm-hmm. but.
And yeah, and I mean, in this sort of situation, like, if you do have, like, your heart set on, like, a specific, like, color and body style of Wrangler, like, I'm not one to turn you down, because, like, I would love to be able to do that at some point in my life, just be able to walk in and be like, okay, this is exactly the car I want in this color with these options. Like, this is mine.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. I'd like to be able to do that sometime in my life. So
I think a Wrangler would be, I would like to do that with specifically a Wrangler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it depends on how you're feeling. But yeah, these are both are solid options.
But we're all leaning toward option B.
Yeah.
Which includes the clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll leave it there. Jeff, we are hopefully giving you clarity. See what we did there. On that note, we're going to head out. It's almost the weekend. It's nearing noon Eastern time on Friday. Have a great weekend. Download the Autoblog podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're so inclined, please leave us a great rating. That helps us get the word out about the Autoblog podcast. Be safe out there. We'll see you next time.
Hey everybody, this is podcast producer Eric Meyer here. I just wanted to chime in at the end of the episode and let everybody know that Autoblog has merchandise now. We've got t-shirts, coffee mugs, hoodies, throw pillows, you name it. You can find it all at redbubble.com/people/autoblog, or you can just search Autoblog on redbubble.com. As always, thanks for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.